It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Severe storms swept through Wisconsin last week, bringing strong winds, heavy rainfall, and massive hail that caused extensive damage, especially in central and southern Wisconsin.
The National Weather Service has issued more than 150 warnings for severe thunderstorms, tornadoes, and flash floods so far this month. That's more than six times the average for the whole month of April, according to the state climatology office.
Later, we'll hear about why Wisconsin is seeing more April storms.
But first, how do local emergency services prepare for severe weather? And what's the cleanup like in the aftermath as a long recovery process begins?
For that, we turn to Shane Hubbard, an emergency management specialist at UW-Madison. We spoke on Thursday. Shane, a series of severe storms have swept through Wisconsin in recent days. The storms have caused widespread damage to cars and homes and other buildings. What happens in the days following a big storm as local officials begin to survey the damage?
Well, in that initial phase, we're concerned about life safety, okay? And so we're looking at things that might be impacting people's lives. Are there any injuries? And then we start moving into critical facilities. Do we have damages to our police stations, our fire stations? And then as we transition out of the emergency and into the recovery period, that's when we're starting to do these real damage assessments, understanding the scope and magnitude of the damage, what's it going to cost to repair the buildings, how badly damaged are they?
Who might be involved in this damage assessment?
There's teams of people here on campus. We have a group of people that will be assessing the damage. And really, in two phases, you're going to have people that are going to be looking at, you know, what it's going to cost to rebuild. And you've got people looking at the insurance pieces of it as well. And the same thing's true within the state as well. So the counties will be doing their damage assessments in along with the state. And if we get to a place where the damage is so excessive, FEMA will come in and they'll help do a damage assessment as well.
We've seen with these storms some very large hail compared to grapefruits, compared to baseballs. What do emergency management professionals look out for in disasters like this when there's a range of risks to people and to property and when you have this type of hail?
What we really want to do is before something like this happens, we have people prepared. We spend a lot of time trying to educate the communities about the risks that they have. We work alongside sometimes with folks like the National Weather Service as well. And the goal is to have people ready so that when we do have something happen, we can recover much quicker. When we're thinking about damage, especially if you think about tornadoes and severe weather, in those cases, we want to make sure people have a place to live, that the building's habitable. If they have needs, that we put them in touch with the folks that can get those needs to them. People like the Salvation Army, the Red Cross, those teams will come in to help them as well. And then there are also state services that we can help them with that will allow those folks to help recover a lot quicker. We have to do this as a community of people. It's not just one person. It relies on a large group of people from healthcare to fire to EMS to emergency managers. It's just a big group of people.
I would imagine, too, all of these groups have to work together, work in unison to ensure that, they're providing all the support they can.
Yeah, and we have meetings often to make sure we have that all together and we know what we're going to do. We have pages and pages and pages of planning documents, and we think about these things all the time so that when it comes time to help support our communities, we're ready to do that.
What do you do around downed power lines? Because that, too, is such a dangerous moment.
So a lot of times that starts with law enforcement, people making calls to dispatch, letting them know that there are power lines down, and then our law enforcement will try to do something to barricade that away. And then calls are then made to the electric companies that are then going to service those power lines. And certainly when we lose power any time of the year, I mean, certainly in the wintertime, even worse, right? But anytime we lose power, then we have to be very concerned, especially in the summertime. We have the heat. No power means no air conditioning. You know, people that might be older in age or have some kind of health concern, we want to make sure that they have a way to stay cool.
In terms of the debris cleanup, we've seen the downed trees, broken glass, sheet metal from roofs and warehouses. Who is responsible for the cleanup and what are the priorities in debris removal?
So one of the things we have to think about is where is it going to go? And so communities think about that, staging the debris. And then we have to think about separating the debris. Some of these things may go to the landfill. Some of the things we might be able to reuse. Are there environmental concerns? You know, do we have petroleum or some sort of gasoline or something that leaked on the materials? Those may have to go to a different place altogether. And so once that process has been completed, then we'll have crews come in and they'll remove the debris for us. And sometimes those are things that FEMA will pick up the expense on if it's a federally declared disaster. And other times it's something the community has to deal with in terms of the cost and the removal of the debris.
Damage can come in many different ways. Is there any type of typical timeline to putting a community back whole or in terms of recovery? How long does it take? Because it's, a storm can take minutes or even hours.
I can take you to communities in Florida, Georgia, along the Gulf Coast, and they are still recovering from hurricanes that have happened 10 years ago. Depends on the magnitude of the disaster and the community makeup. The more resilient the community is, the more they've planned and prepared, the way the structures are constructed and built, these things help communities recover much faster. You can think about the flooding that we had in 2008 here in Wisconsin and how long that—
2008.
Oh, and then in 2018, okay. We had the flooding that was in Dane County, but also in other areas of the state as well. And those took a very long time because these were very large events for those communities to come back. What happens, though, in major events like this is even though the community might come back in terms of the structures are rebuilt and the businesses structures, a lot of times the communities aren't the same. You have a lot of people that may move away. They've lost everything, and they use that as an opportunity to go somewhere else. They don't want to do that again. They don't want to go through the disaster again. You have a lot of businesses that don't return. So even though we rebuild the community, it's not always the same community as it was before the disaster happened. And that's just one of the unfortunate circumstances of what happens during these types of events.
People may be at the moment starting to file insurance claims. Do you have any advice for this particular step?
What I usually tell people is a lot of times you think about insurance as being, you know, your safety net. But even rebuilding your structure, and even if the insurance company is right there with you, getting the money to you, these things take a long time to complete. And so while that sounds nice, we want to do everything we can to protect ourselves from that damage. So anything we can do to our homes, stronger windows. So the next time you replace the windows, make them more impact resistant. You have a new roof put on, make sure it's hail resistant. New siding, hail resistant, wind resistant. Because even though we have that safety net of insurance, it's still a big process to get back to being whole again. So I always recommend if you're ever there replacing something on your house, make it better and stronger.
After a big storm, people might start getting the calls or offers in the mail from roofing companies, from contractors offering estimates and repairs. What are some ways to determine what offers are legitimate?
That's not as easy as you might think, right? Certainly, anytime you can research them on the internet, Better Business Bureau and things like that, that may alert you to being a scam there. Making sure you follow up with any sort of reporting agency within the state. I always recommend getting two or three estimates anyway. So if there's one that doesn't check out and you think, man, I just don't trust this one, make sure you have a couple of more estimates and then you have that safety net. Certainly a local group is probably the best and the most trustworthy. You can talk to other people and find out. But there is no question, after a major hail event, you will have trucks of people here to try to repair your roof. So just do your research. Local companies are always the best. And then just go from there.
You are based on a big, busy college campus. What happens when people don't take these threats seriously of severe storms and severe weather?
Thankfully, our campus, I think, is really well prepared. We have both, you know, if the sirens go off, we have that. We have the Badger Safe app on our campus. We have an alerting system that goes to the phones. And that's not just unique to us. There are a lot of communities that have similar things to them. What happens, though, is if we have people that aren't heeding the warnings and something happens, they get injured or something like that, that takes resources away from us to help other people that couldn't be helped, so that we have to go and help them. And so the fewer people that are not out there that are doing the right thing, we want as many people out there, the ones that are doing the wrong thing. Just know that if you get something happens, then you're taking resources away. So we try to do everything we can to make sure we're warning the public. I think in the storms that we've had this year, that's gone very well. We've been able to reach a lot of our community members. And a university is, it's a mini city. You think about that. There's, you know, 500 some buildings on the campus. So, you know, and all of them we own. Unlike some cities, they don't own all the buildings, right? So we have to think about a lot of people. We could have almost 80,000 people on our campus in one day.
Wow.
Not including the visitors and things. And so we really have to think about protecting the folks that we have.
Shane, thank you for joining us.
That's great. Thank you for having me.
That was Shane Hubbard, Emergency Management Specialist at UW-Madison. We've been talking about the phases of disaster recovery after severe storms tore through parts of the state last week. Now for a look at why Wisconsin is seeing severe storms in April, we turn to J.J. Wood. He's a National Weather Service meteorologist based in the Milwaukee Sullivan Station. J.J., thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Starting with the timing of these storms, April thunderstorms wreaking havoc in Wisconsin. There were deadly tornadoes that hit Michigan in early March. And I remember that rare tornado outbreak in December of 2021 here. You know, setting aside rare events, are severe storms moving through our region earlier in the year than usual?
Yes, we've noticed a trend of severe weather occurring earlier in the springtime months, more so in March and into April. Normally it's more April into May. So yes, we've certainly seen that trend over the last, you know, 20, 30 years, but especially in the last 10 years or so in Wisconsin, in southern Wisconsin in particular.
Is that due to climate change or weather patterns? What do you notice?
Yes, you know, climate change certainly has had an impact on that, being that we're warmer and we tend to have milder temperatures now in the springtime than we normally did before. So you get warmer air. What's happened is you tend to get, if you get good southerly flow, you can get moist air that comes out of the Gulf, and you get moisture, and then you can get a low pressure system and a cold front moving through the region. You can get unstable and produce thunderstorms. And if you get enough wind shear, you can have severe weather. And that's, but we've seen that trend occur over many years across the state.
The Great Plains has that nickname of Tornado Alley, but Tornado Alley has also been expanding, from what I understand, eastward to include Wisconsin. What does this mean for severe weather forecasting in our state?
Well, you know, it certainly means that, you know, people certainly need to be aware of severe weather. This is actually Tornado and Severe Weather Awareness Week in Wisconsin. So we certainly try to reach out to folks and let them know that, you know, severe weather season is coming. And obviously from the past weekend, it's already started for a good part of the state. So we certainly encourage, if we are going to get, you know, more severe weather early in the season and more severe weather overall, that we want people to be aware. We say being weather aware of the forecast. If there's severe weather in the forecast, to certainly pay attention, have multiple ways to receive warnings, and take shelter when a warning is issued.
Can you walk us through what factors are considered when determining whether a tornado touched down in an area?
We have a way on radar to detect if tornado debris is occurring. It's called a tornado debris signature on our Doppler radar. And we can see in real time if we see that signature and it's correlated in the same area as the rotating updraft of a thunderstorm where a tornado could possibly occur, we can confirm that there's tornado debris occurring on radar. And then what we can do afterwards is we send a damage survey team out to those locations where we suspect there might be tornado damage, either from that radar signature I was mentioning before, or if we're just suspicious about something happening through reports that we receive that we want to investigate it, we send that team out to that location. And from that, they look at things like damaged trees, damaged homes, structures, things like that. We look for specific indicators in the damage, like how was the damage spread out? Was it in one direction? Was it twisted about in several directions in a small area? How well was the structure built that was damaged or destroyed? All of those factors go into how we apply a damage rating scale to the damage. And if we determine it is a tornado, we can apply that EF0 to EF5 enhanced Fujita tornado rating scale to it. So we can determine how strong the tornado damage was, how strong the winds were that it produced the damage.
That makes sense. And Madison also has seen hail that was very large compared to, you know, baseballs. What creates such big chunks of hail and that term hail core?
This was a unique thunderstorm. It's called the supercell thunderstorm. And these types of thunderstorms, you know, we typically will see them in the plains and you know, in Iowa and such in the springtime during peak tornado season. But we can get them here in Wisconsin. And what a supercell thunderstorm is, it's an individual thunderstorm that develops. And again, it has that rotating updraft, meaning air is rising up and rotating counterclockwise in a thunderstorm as it goes up. And that helps keep the thunderstorm going. And when the thunderstorm rotates, it has a better chance, especially if it lives long enough, to produce not only tornadoes, but very large hail and very strong winds. And in this case, with this storm that moved through Madison, this was a supercell-type thunderstorm. And it was able to loft enough moisture high enough into the storm where it froze, and then it kept suspending that frozen hailstone. It kept growing bigger and bigger and bigger, till eventually it got so big it fell out. And these supercell thunderstorms are known to produce the largest types of hailstones. And we certainly saw that. We had widespread 2 to 3 inch hail and even a couple up to 4 inches, like you mentioned, in diameter. So extremely large hail. And that's what these supercell type thunderstorms are known to produce.
These recent days have been so busy for meteorologists. I wonder, do you feel there's adequate staffing for the National Weather Service in Wisconsin, especially when consecutive days of severe weather hits?
Luckily, in our office here at the Sullivan office, we cover most of southern Wisconsin, including Milwaukee and Madison. We have a good amount of staffing here. What we do is we'll staff up if we're anticipating severe weather. We'll get more people in the office to help out with various things, from issuing warnings to taking reports to monitoring the environment to reaching out to our partners to talking with the media. So every office in the Weather Service, we have them all over the country. We all do this when severe weather happens, but, you know, certainly in our office, we're pretty well staffed to handle that. And most offices, you know, this is our main mission in the Weather Service, to issue those warnings to save life and property. That's one of our main missions. So every office in the Weather Service will be staffing up during times of severe weather to make sure that mission is met.
JJ, thank you for joining us.
You're welcome. Thank you.
That was meteorologist J.J. Wood with the National Weather Service's Milwaukee Sullivan Station. Earlier, we heard from Shane Hubbard, Emergency Management Specialist at UW-Madison. We've been talking about this year's early severe storm season after communities in much of the state saw damage from flooding, tornadoes, and hail last week.